So the previous speakers have talked a little bit about how the current food system, the industrial food system, is impacting communities in the U.S. and how, you know, how there are issues with how our current food system is not necessarily the best way to go, the best route to go. I want to touch a little bit about how this particular system that we are in right now impacts other countries as well, and farmers and communities in other countries as well. So that's sort of going to be the focus of my presentation. I mean, clearly, you know, just from previous speakers that came, you have a sense that the current industrial food system and the concentration by the companies that that we talked about leads to an erosion of rural farm communities, leads to an erosion of land ownership by farmers, leads to diet and health changes that are not necessarily healthy, and also leads to a cultural erosion of the foods that people are eating. So keeping that in perspective is really going to be the focus of my my talk here. So I'm going to start off with the topic that has been listed out as the title, which is food sovereignty and food justice. Food sovereignty, as you all know, sort of started a couple of years back when representatives from several different countries from across the world met in Nicaragua to develop a peasant farm-based organization to address some of these issues that farmers were facing, and in the developing world as well as in countries in the developed world as well. The basic premise of food sovereignty is the right for each nation to maintain and develop its own capacity to produce its food in the way they want it, to respect the culture and the productive capacity of that nation, and the right of its people to define its own agricultural policy. And so that was the sort of the premise of how food sovereignty initiatives came, got started. And with the development of, how do you move this? I think the mouse is working.
Okay.
So with the development of an organization called La Via Campesina, which is really the organization that has taken on food sovereignty as its mainstay of the work that it does, La Via Campesina works with a mission to develop solidarity and unity amongst small farmers and its organizations to promote gender parity and social justice, which is what we are talking about here in the food system, for fair economic relations, the preservation of land, water, seeds, and other natural resources. Food sovereignty also means sustainable agricultural production, which we've talked about also, and based on small and medium-sized producers. So that is really the premise of food sovereignty, and several different countries across the world have signed on to La Via Campesina and have become members. The organization, I think, challenges WTO and other global trade agreements that undermine national food security of these organizations, and that is why I think it's important to mention it here today. The six pillars of food sovereignty, of how La Via Campesina talks about it, is the right to food, the right to respect for people who provide the food, the support for local food systems, the support for local control over the resources that that produce food, the support for local knowledge and skills and the development of those knowledge and skills, and working with nature in those communities that are producing the food. So that is really tying in well with what we've been talking about here today, and that's why I think food sovereignty has a strong link with what we are talking here in the U.S. in terms of food justice or community food systems. You know, it's a different way of approaching it, because food sovereignty is based in peasant and the farmer movement, and it sort of came from there. But really, I think there is a strong link in terms of what we are talking about here today in terms of food justice and community food systems. Food sovereignty also, I think, works around the premise that it doesn't necessarily negate trade or negate global trade, but it provides or promotes the formation of trade policies and practices that serve the right of serve the rights of people to safe, healthy, and economically sustainable and environmentally sustainable food. So I think that is a distinction that needs to be made, because often there is some talk that food sovereignty movements are negating trade and do not necessarily promote global trade. But I think it's important to keep in mind that it is not necessarily that way. It is just that trade needs to happen in a way that promotes these things that we just talked about. And so that's just keeping that in mind. It's also, I think, they use the phrase, La Via Campesina uses the phrase, community value of food versus the commodity value of food, which ties in, again, well with what we are talking about here today. And you know, just keeping in mind, so just giving you the linkage of how the community food security movement in the United States is linked up with the food sovereignty movement in the overall world, the other countries as well. You know, food sovereignty, I think, is central to food justice and community food security. We were really thrilled to see that in 2009, the Community Food Security Coalition instituted a food sovereignty prize that has now been provided every year. The first prize was awarded to La Via Campesina, and here you see Dana Hoff and Eduardo Garcia from La Via Campesina receiving that prize at the Food Security Coalition's annual meeting. So I think there is clearly more of an understanding here in the United States about the linkages with you know, things happening in other countries that that are impacted by what's happening here in the United States. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what's happening in other countries, but I also wanted to talk a little bit about what happens in the United States in terms of where food comes from. And so I ask you, where does your garlic come from, and where does your food come from is really what I wanted to get at. I think as we talk about where our food comes from, we are hitting upon the points about food justice. We are talking about where our food comes from and how it is grown and what are the various injustices that are happening across the food system that is getting that garlic to you. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story about garlic and how it reaches our households and using that as a framework for talking about food justice. How many of you are aware of a town called Gilroy in California? Right. It's a pretty well-known town. It's a small town, less than about 50,000 population, mostly Latino population, and it's called the garlic capital of the world because it's a large garlic producer. In 1994, the U.S. imposed a heavy duty on Chinese garlic coming into the United States because there was a large amount of garlic that was coming into the United States, which was impeding the production and the marketing of garlic from Gilroy. As a result of that, there were several producers from and marketing companies from China that met those requirements. There was a bond that needed to be filled out, and those companies were more than willing to fill it out. So as a result of that, despite U.S. you know, U.S. legislation that that did not let Chinese garlic come into the U.S., by 2004, about 50% of the garlic in the United States was coming from China. And as a result of that, Gilroy producers were obviously losing their production, losing their market. There was a large amount of unemployment in terms of the farm worker situation in Gilroy. And obviously, as a town, I think Gilroy was losing, you know, losing out because it was losing its major mainstay and occupation, which was garlic production. So just to give you a sense of what happens here in the U.S. as well because of issues about global trade. Another story that I wanted to share with you was potato chips in China. In 1997, when PepsiCo introduced potato chips in China, it encountered several problems with it. And one was that China had a ban on potato imports from any other countries. Second was that China's potato growing patterns and growing varieties really differed from what was good for PepsiCo in terms of manufacturing their chips. So as a result of that, what happened was that PepsiCo ended up buying up land in China and becoming one of the largest potato growers in China. So just keep in mind that what is that doing to Chinese production, of potatoes, and what is that doing to Chinese farmers and Chinese agricultural production overall and the communities that were growing potatoes in China, just to give you a sense of what happens when that happens. So, to wrap up, you know, as I've said, global food impacts and global trade food impacts on food and communities. There's erosion of rural farm communities. There's farm labor issues that were discussed earlier today. There's loss of local control over farmland. There's loss of control over food access. Food service industries are impacted as well, and the economy is impacted, and then there's environmental considerations that we need to keep in mind as well. There's erosion of food culture as well. It is interesting to see that just in 2004, the FAO of the United Nations coined a term called globesity, which really means the impact of the global food system on obesity to me, because that is what it is. And we're in a culture where we are providing more value on convenience versus health, it is because of the way the current food system is structured. I wanted to leave you with another story from the United States, which I think touches upon quite a few of these, and it is really dear to my heart because that's what I work on, farm-to-school programs. This is a story from Pine Point Farm-to-School Program in Minnesota, where a Native American community has worked within their own community to support local agriculture, support local farmers, gardeners, and businesses within their community to provide local foods to the schools within their system. They've reintroduced traditional foods, so, you know, talking about cultural reintroduction of foods that have been lost by things like wild rice, blueberries, venison, maple syrup, and things like that that are grown within the community. They have a program where they educate kids about and community members about where their food comes from and the cultural aspects that they had lost. They do a community feast where they eat together, and they have cooking classes for the community to get back to the basics of cooking food from food that is grown within their community. So I think that this program kind of touches upon a lot of the food justice issues that we want to address here. This is a picture from the Pine Point Farm to School program. I wanted to make a plug for this book that was mentioned. It's a book, Food Justice, that just came out that I co-authored. And there is definitely a tie-in with what I've been talking about, and the way we define food justice is that it seeks to ensure the benefits and risks of where, what, and how food is grown, produced, transported, distributed, accessed, and eaten are shared fairly. So it really touches upon the various aspects of how and where food touches upon within the food system and ensuring that there is justice in all those points. Food justice represents the transformation of the current food system, obviously, because we realize that the current food system is not the way it should be. And it provides a framework for systemic change, which is what we're all talking about here today, that change can happen within communities, but really there's larger change that needs to happen at the policy level and at setting up infrastructure, et cetera. I think food justice as a framework is important, and I advocate for it just because it provides a framework for linkage with other social justice movements like environmental justice, public health, labor, housing, transportation. I think there's a way to do that really well. So with that, I'm just going to leave you with the connections with food justice and public health. I think are clear where whenever we are talking about public health, we need to be looking at how the decisions that we are making in terms of how we are approaching public health influences what, where, and how people are eating, and where that food came from, and how any kind of justice issues were in the framework of how that food was grown and how it reached you. So I think if we keep that in mind, we would be looking at infrastructure changes and looking at systemic changes and policy changes that are just, and that will serve us well in the long run. Thank you.